Most resilience programs don't fail because the plans are wrong. They fail because the people running them made the work more complicated than it needed to be. And they never tied it back to anything that the business, the executives, actually care about. I've seen this happen. Smart leaders, experienced leaders, people who know the material cold, and they still, without meaning to, buried a simple program under so much structure and so much terminology and so much process that nobody outside the program could understand it or try to follow it or champion it. So today I want to talk with you about why that happens, what it costs you, and how to strip that back out. I'm Brian Strausser, Principal and Chief Executive at BrightPath, and this is the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. So here's where this episode comes from. Over 12 years now of leading BrightPath and interacting with leaders that oversee resilience programs, I've sat in a lot of rooms with a lot of people inside big, complex organizations, and I've started noticing the same pattern over and over. The language would get denser. The committees would multiply. A simple decision would turn into a paragraph or a page. A one-hour training session would somehow get a 15-page communications plan. And by the time the point reached the people who actually had to act upon that issue, it had picked up so much process and qualification and acronyms that the original idea was hard to find. And here's the part I want to be really clear about. None of these were bad leaders. That's exactly why we should be talking about this. Overcomplicating your resilience program is not a failure of intelligence. It's not a failure of effort. All of these people cared a lot and they knew a lot, but it's a failure of discipline. And it's one of the most common ways that a good program, or the seeds of a good program, quietly stalls out. Let me walk you through how I think about this. Every layer that you add to a resilience program, every layer that you add to your messaging has a cost that comes along with it. And I don't just mean the cost of building it or the cost of running it. I mean the cost of everyone underneath you and across the organization having to understand it and navigate it and then turn around and explain it to somebody else. I call this the complexity tax. You pay it every time that you stand up another team or another steering committee or another tier that overlaps with one that you already have. You pay it every time that you use four words when one would do. You pay it every time somebody asks you a yes or no question and you answer with a framework or a white paper or a report. And here's the thing about this tax. You don't see it on the org chart. You don't see it in a planning meeting, but in a real event when you're really trying to execute your program, it's brutal. Because when a disruption actually hits, your program does not run at the speed of your intentions. It runs at the speed of the least clear thing that's in it, the least clear thing that causes people to not know what to do. So I want to say that again, because the whole episode really kind of sums up in this one line. Your program will run at the speed of the least clear thing in the program. If your team can't explain who decides what in one sentence on a normal Tuesday, they're not going to suddenly find the clarity at 2 o'clock in the morning with systems down and a ransom demand sitting at the table. So hear me out on this, that resilience is not the same thing as sophistication. The goal is not a program that impresses people in a planning meeting. The goal is a program that your people can run under pressure. Now here's where it gets interesting, because when a resilience leader senses that the program is shaky, the instinct is almost always the same. Add rigor, stand up another team, write another charter, build a more detailed taxonomy, maybe create a new SharePoint site, schedule a recurring meeting to coordinate your other meetings. And it feels like leadership. It really does. But it's the opposite. So I want to give you a couple reframes here and think of these as maybe old view versus new view. The old view is that more structure meant more control. The new view is that more structure just means more places for clarity to leak out. The old view is adding a team or adding a step will close the gap. The new view is adding a team or step usually just creates two new handoffs that you didn't have before. The old view is that precise terminology equals expertise. The new view is plain language signals you actually understand it. The old view is that a finished plan means that the work is done. The new view is a plan that no one gets to the business, no one ties to the business, is just paperwork. And this last one, this is my favorite. The old view, knowing the framework means knowing the plan. The new view, if you can't explain what the plan does, You don't have one. The leaders I watched fail in this regard were not lazy. They were diligent. They were diligent to a fault. That was the problem. Their diligence expressed itself as addition, more bodies, more words, more caveats, more process, more committees, almost never subtraction. Let me get specific here because I have five ways that I've seen capable leaders overcomplicate resilience. And I've seen every one of these from people who knew their material. Number one, a structure that no one can explain. A lot of programs have a lot of different layers and response teams. Maybe there's a cyber crisis team and a broader crisis management team. Maybe there's an escalation tier above them. There's nothing wrong with that on its own. The problem starts when the person running it can't explain it in plain language. Who does what and where one team hands off to the next? I have watched leaders raise that exact question about their own structure, meeting after meeting, and never resolve it. So here's the test. If you can't explain your own response model simply, one of two things is true. Either your design is too complicated, or you're not communicating it well enough. And both of these are your problem to fix. Number two, terminology that hides the meaning. This is my favorite about the resilience field. We make this so complicated, it's like trying to, you would think that we were doing space exploration and building rockets. Our field runs on acronyms, BC, DR, BIA, RTO, RPO, MTPD, on and on and on. And we have hours-long arguments about this terminology. I don't care about most of it. This is the shorthand that we use among practitioners, and that's fine. But in front of the business, speak in plain language. The clearest example I've seen of this was a leader trying to describe a role that they needed in their program, new headcount, new resource. What they meant was simple. We need one person to own this so it doesn't fall apart. What they actually said is that they wanted to ensure continuity of process and the rigor and discipline to support it moving forward. Now, that second version sounds more senior, I'll give you that. It's also almost impossible to act on. And there's the lesson. Abstraction is where accountability goes to hide. Number three, a program that's not tied to the business. And you've heard me talk about this numerous times. But this is the big one. This is the one that matters the most. Too many resilience programs exist to satisfy themselves. They produce plans because plans are the deliverable, not because anybody connected those plans to what the business actually needs to keep running. And when a program can't tell you which revenue stream or what customer commitment or which critical process that a given plan protects, it has stopped being resilient. It's become paperwork. Here's what's painful about that. Leadership feels the disconnect even when they can't put words to it. And that's exactly why so many programs end up fighting for funding and attention that they should never have had to fight for. Number four, explaining plans you don't actually understand. I've watched leaders talk very confidently about the BC plan or our DR capability with no real grasp of what these plans actually do, what they assume, or whether or not they would actually hold up and work in the moment. Saying we have business continuity plans for our sites means nothing if you can't tell me what happens when that site goes down. Who moves what? Who makes what? Where does the manufacturing shift to? How long it takes? Borrowed language without the unifying understanding is the most dangerous kind of complexity because it sounds like competence right up until the moment you need it to be real. And number five, solving confusion by adding more process. Faced with a gap, the reflex is to add something. A one-hour training gets a multi-touch communications campaign. A ownership question becomes a proposal for a new standing meeting. A naming problem becomes another playbook. And none of these are crazy on their own, but stack them all up together and you have turned a program that anybody could follow into one that only the architect can navigate. Here's what ties all five of these together. None of them came from incompetence. They come from caring a lot. They come from knowing a lot and never running the work back through one simple filter. Is this simpler or more complex than it needs to be? So let's talk about the fix. And the fix is not more sophistication. The fix is discipline. So here's the practical version, six simple things. First, explain the whole program in five sentences. If you can't describe your response structure, who decides what and how it escalates in five simple, plain sentences, then the problem is either the program design or your command of it. So figure out which one and fix that before you talk to anybody else. And don't think of the five-sentence version as the dumbed-down version. This is the real version. Number two, cut the acronyms, particularly in front of the business. Among practitioners, fine. That's use the shorthand. But in front of executives, say what you mean in words that a smart outsider will understand. Say what you mean in words your executives and your board will understand. And when you catch yourself reaching for words like rigor, discipline, continuity, or process, just stop. Just stop. Name the person. Name the date. Name the task. Your team cannot execute a noun, but they can execute with a person, date, and a task. Number three, make sure every plan is anchored to business outcomes. Before you build or maintain a plan, name the revenue stream or the customer commitment or the critical process that it protects. If you're doing BC the right way, you're already doing this. You have BIAs, your critical processes, tied to plans. A program that is tied to the business gets funded and it gets used. A program that's tied to nothing will get nothing. It'll get ignored, no matter how complete things look. Number four, know your own plans cold. Don't talk about a BC or DR plan that you cannot explain in plain language. What does it protect? What does it assume? What happens in the first hour? How long does recovery actually take? And if you don't know, say so and go find out. Borrowed confidence is worse than admitted uncertainty because it will fail exactly the moment that you're counting on it. Number five, subtract before you add. This is probably my favorite lesson from the FX series, The Bear, about Chef Carmen, was him learning how to subtract ingredients, how to simplify the dish, how to reduce the cost of the dish and achieve the same outcome. So when something is unclear, default to removing a step, not adding one. For every team, every meeting, every document, ask what would actually break if it disappeared. And I'll be honest with you. Most of the time, the honest answer is nothing, except for some egos, maybe. Simplicity is a choice, and it's a choice you have to keep making. When we come into an organization and we're looking at their resilience program, this is one of the first things that we do is figure out what can be subtracted, what can be done here to make this more understandable to the business. Number six, translate before you publish. Before any plan or charter or briefing or presentation goes out, hand it to somebody else in the organization, outside of your team. And if they can't tell you what this means and what they're supposed to do about it, it's not done. Remember that the executive who has to use your program in a crisis carries none of the context that you carry. You are writing things for them, for that person. So let me bring this home. What does good actually look like? Well, a resilience program that works is not the one that has the most components. It's one that a tired person can run correctly at the worst possible moment. Sit with that for a second. A tired person in the biggest critical moment of your organization, the worst possible moment. And that's the bar that you're building your program for. That means fewer moving parts. They might have sharper edges though. Plain words instead of acronyms. Plans are tied to things the business cares about. One owner per outcome. And a leader who can explain the whole thing in five sentences and then trust the room to act. The leaders I watched had everything they needed to build this. They had the expertise, they had real authority, they had genuine commitment. The one thing they didn't have was a habit of subtraction. And that single missing habit cost their program speed and clarity and the momentum that they could not afford to lose. So here's the thought I want to leave you with. Resilience is not how much your team can build. It's about how little stands between your people and the right action when it counts. Strip it down, say it once, and then go. That's it for this edition of the Managing Uncertainty Podcast. I'll be back next week with another new episode. Be well.